happy Wednesday. It's a marvelous day and wonderful things are happening to you. Can you feel it? Take a deep breath in and say, yes, yes, yes. Wonderful things are happening to me today. I can feel it. This is David Sandercott, and I'm here today with the Vegan Monk, who just simply goes by Monk. I'm very excited for him to share his story with you, how he went from the streets to a champion vegan bodybuilder. But for now, let's just take a quick deep breath in, and just on the exhale, let go of our day, our troubles, our worries, our concerns. Just close our eyes if you haven't already. Just take one more deep breath in, breathing into any stress or tension in your body, and just release and let go. Now just imagine that you're stepping into a warm, bubbling jacuzzi or hot mineral spring, and as you submerge yourself into the warm, bubbling water, you're just effortlessly relaxed. It's just like, as you soak in the warm, bubbling water. Now bring all your attention to the point between your eyebrows or your third eye. This is your homing beacon. You'll just bring your attention back to this point over and over again. So if you find your mind wandering, you just bring your attention here. So it's like you don't have to focus on your breath, or you don't have to think of any sort of special thing or repeat anything. Just keep bringing your attention to the point between your eyebrows. If it's comfortable, you can lift your gaze, sort of rolling your eyes back in your head. And this is our tuning dial. It's like we begin to tune in to the more subtle frequencies in our body. Like tune in to the chi flowing through your meridians, the life force, and the breath that you breathe. Take a moment now to hold your breath for a moment and listen and feel your heart beat. Now connect with the life force that's causing your heart to beat. You're not doing that. There's something innate within you, some innate intelligence that's causing life within you. And how could you be anything else other than what causes life within you? So you're that which causes your heart to beat. Breathe in and connect with that which mends your bones when they break or heals your skin when it gets cut. You know, you don't know how to do that. So if you're the life force itself that can, you know, mend your bones when they break, that it causes your heart to beat. Well, what you're not is your mind or your body. You're not your personality. You're not your job. You're not the story that you tell people about yourself. You're not your social economic situation. You're not your past. You're not your gender. You're the life force itself. You're the love itself. And the more conscious you are of this reality, the more conscious you will be. The more conscious you are of your consciousness, the more conscious you are. So take a deep breath in and ask yourself, how conscious am I? By simply reflecting upon how conscious you are, you'll become a degree more conscious. The more you practice, the more conscious you'll become. The more conscious you are, the better you'll feel, the easier your life will work, the less mistakes you'll make. Everything will be in flow. You'll be living in the zone. What you want to manifest will manifest almost infinitely if it's what needs to happen. But when you're unconscious is when you make mistakes or when you hurt people, you say things you regret. Only unconscious people murder and rape. Only unconscious people would pollute and pillage the earth for profit and greed. So the answer is consciousness. If we want to change the world, if we want to bring about peace on earth, it's to increase the consciousness of humanity, right? And how do we do that? Well, by increasing individual consciousness, by making peace on earth an individual mission, because it is. It's not a, what can I do? It's I'm the only one that can do something. You know, if peace on earth is not my responsibility, whose job is it? Take a deep breath in, and if you'd like to, say yes, yes, yes to peace on earth. Yes to more compassion. Yes to more consciousness of humanity, to elevating the consciousness of humanity to a point where we can live together in peace. Let's just take a moment now to bring up our hands like love satellites. Just going to kind of face them out towards one another. Like if we were in the jacuzzi together, we'd be able to play patty cake with one another. You can put your attention on the tips of your fingers and palms of your hands. I'm just going to send love to you. You can just imagine love coming to you like sparkling golden white light. And the more open you are to receive, the more you'll receive. And it can be a subtle feeling, but usually you'll feel it in the tips of your fingers or palms of your hands. Now just imagine a ball of love and light forming. Take a deep breath in and draw the love and light through your arms, through your shoulders, into your physical heart, expanding it 2 or 3 inches. And exhale and exude the love and light out through every cell in your being. And again, breathe in, deeper breath, breathing in more love, more light, expanding your heart 3, 4 inches, filling it with love. Exhale and exude it out beyond your physical body. Tune in to your love satellites. Feel the energy getting stronger and breathe in more. Be gluttonous. Say yes. More love, more light. Expanding your heart 6 inches, filling it with love. Exhale and exude it out so you're enshrouded in a cocoon of golden white light. And just go ahead and bring your hands down on your lap. Tuning in to the consciousness itself. How conscious you are of your consciousness, and engaging all your attention at the point between your eyebrows. So we teach Kundalini meditation, if you want to give it a name. And what we do is we use this homing beacon, our third eye, to help us tune into our spirit. You know, we're not used to connecting with our spirit. And by looking at this point, it creates a natural feedback loop in our body, a natural relaxation response, lowering our brainwave so we can tune in more to what is. And when we do this, it feels good. And the more you can merge with the feeling, merge into the feeling, and meditate on that feeling of the life force itself, you know, that's your meditation. That's an advanced practice. This is the direct path to self-realization, the path of fire. Take a deep breath in and say, yes, yes, I am open to receive, I am open to receive. There's no real dogma or there's no real practice. It's just meditate. Just put your attention at this point and hold it there, eradicating all other thoughts by holding your attention at this point. And then let the life force, let spirit itself guide the meditation. So it's not so much that you're meditating, but however, you're allowing yourself to be meditated. Take a deep breath in and say, yes, 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 I am open to receive. I am open to receive. Let's just get a little, let's just bring up our right hand for a second. This is our catcher's mitt of love. Sort of just going to send love to this right hand and then to the tip of your middle finger. So put all your attention at the tip of your middle finger, and you can just imagine love and light forming at the tip of this finger. And the atmosphere around you is purified and blessed by the divine. May the divine energy descend upon you. You are purified and blessed. You are protected and guided by the divine in all your activities, day and night, in all places. Om. Let's just go ahead and touch your third eye with your middle finger. Maybe give it a tap or two. Just merge into the feeling. Merge into the feeling. When you're ready, you can bring your, that's good. When you're ready, bring your hands down on your lap. The more open you are to receive, the more you'll receive as we sit in silence for a moment. Deep breath in. Open your heart just a little more. Just let in a little more love, a little more light. Just notice how you feel. So normally I conduct a class with lessons and stuff, and typically people will kind of just keep their eyes closed and listen. You know, the energy is still being conducted. The love is still being sent. So just stay tuned in to the love. Stay tuned in to the life force. Just see if you can just stay connected and kind of listen with your eyes closed as we stay in the energy. I'm just gonna unmute you. Monk, how are, can you hear me, Monk?
Yes, sir.
All right. How are you feeling, brother? Did you get a little connection there? That was a short meditation for you.
Yes, I did. That was really nice. I appreciate that.
Good, good, good. So let me just introduce Monk here to you guys. I mean, most of the people on the call know me. I'm always looking for exceptional people and extraordinary people. Just because why wouldn't you want to connect with extraordinary people? And I'm particularly interested in vegan athletes because I was told my whole life, you got to eat protein, you know, meat specifically, meat, protein. And here's someone who is older than me, has more muscle mass than me, who's totally shredded and ripped, and who's actually a champion vegan bodybuilder. And who was not always like this. You know, 8 years ago, his life was a lot different than this before he started meditating. And I've just sort of been watching him on Facebook and following him and seeing him, evolve. And the one thing, you know, Monk, that I guess I never shared this with you, that most impresses me about vegans or people that are so passionate about this is about the things they post on Facebook calling people out about their cruelty to animals. And it seems rude and it seems like this, and I think it takes so much courage to do. You know, I have a little bit fear of doing it for the sense of people won't like me and they might miss the deeper message of meditation. But
what I think happens is when it comes to that is, for one, I never personally point out anybody in my posts. And I think it just touches them and rubs them the wrong way because it's their own conscious that they're dealing with. You know, it has nothing to do with me. If someone posts something and I don't like it and it's not a negative thing, why wouldn't I like it? So obviously it's a personal thing, and, you know, you can't take that personal if someone reacts in a certain way.
Yeah, you're absolutely right. And it takes a lot of courage, in my opinion. So I just want to say that, you know, I really respect that. So, Monk, why don't you take us back? You know, you started meditating 8 years ago. Why don't you just take us back to the point before you were meditating and what was happening in your life?
So you know, I'm going to take you back to the 60s, right?
To the 60s. Oh, my gosh. Really? You're going back that far? I don't know your age, man. You don't look very old to me. So.
Yeah. No, I barely made the 60s. I was 1969. But, so I guess most of the people on the line are from Humboldt County, I suspect.
People are from all over, but there certainly are people in Humboldt County, and they all know.
I may know some of them, I guess. But they, you know, we may know each other. But yeah, I was born in Bakersfield, and then soon after that, I moved up to Humboldt County. And you know, and I know, there's not a lot of people of color up there. I was one of I was one of seven children, and my father passed away when I was about 3 years old. And we were always on the system. We were very, very poor, so there was a lot of obstacles right off the bat. You know, no father, being a mixed race in Humboldt County and very poor. So the only real connections I had with a male role model were those in, you know, sports, football, basketball, baseball. But other than that, there was no role models except for who my peers were at the time. And when I was really young, I was a really bad kid. At 5 years old, I tried to stab my brother. That was a whole big incident where they had, the babysitter had to call my mom, and we came down, and they took me to church and prayed over me and all that stuff. So when I was very young, I was in the store stealing, doing all that stuff. And then eventually, you know, we were raised in organized religion. So eventually, I became a different person by going to church, or forced to go to church. And as I was forced to go to church, I accepted the religion I was forced to go to, but it was out of fear. It was reward consequence type thing. So it kept me on the right as far as not getting in trouble throughout my early teens. So I was just scared all the time. I didn't want to mess up.
Scared to go to hell?
Exactly. If you do this, you're rewarded. If you don't, there's a serious, you know, price to pay for it. So all those years, I was just scared to death to do anything wrong because this was pounded into my head. So when I finally got, you know, when I finally realized I'm not perfect and I'm going to make mistakes anyways, I might as well make all the mistakes I can. And that's when I started going the other direction. I totally rebelled against everything that I was doing. And I was like, if I'm going to go to hell, I'm going to go to hell my way. So that's what I did. And this went on for 20 plus years. I finally was accepted by certain people, and those certain people were in the same place I was as far as, you know, the poverty, not having male role models, and I got sucked into the drug scene, party scene, you name it, just trying to be that guy, knowing deep down inside that wasn't me. Carrying guns wasn't me. Selling drugs wasn't me. None of that was me. I knew it. The violence wasn't me. None of it. But I didn't know how to change my situation. So I was a heavy drinker, a heavy partier, got into whatever anybody else was getting into, and I was really taking penitentiary chances, you know, just playing Russian roulette, basically. I should have been in prison a few times if the police were doing a job more thorough. I got away with a lot of stuff out there, and unfortunately, most of the people I was with, they did not. And you know, back in the 90s, people were getting arrested for little things and doing a lot of prison time. Your first offense will give you a year and a half, or you know. So everybody was going for long periods of time, and I was at the point where I got to get out of this. You know, I got to get out of Humboldt County because eventually, I'm going to go. It's just a matter of time. So I moved to Oakland in the mid-90s, which you think, well, you're going to get in more trouble out there. Well, because I wasn't really that guy who I was trying to for people to see, or, you know, my image, when I went out there, I kind of reinvented myself, not as really, you know, out in the streets and doing all that, but I was still doing the same type of things. They can get me in trouble, get me killed, or send me to prison. And I ended up getting a job when I was out there, and that kind of calmed me down a little bit. But still, the party scene, the drug scene, all that was still in my life. And then I finally got to a place where it's either I was at a crossroads. I didn't know what to do. I was lost. I had no direction. I had, you know, that question, what am I here for? I just didn't know. I didn't know anything. I just felt like if I kept going the way I was going, then I wasn't going to make it. It was either, you know, you're going to live or you're going to die, one of the two. You can't just keep going the same course. So I always thought about meditation. And I was like, you know, let me look some stuff up. I got on my phone and started looking some stuff up about meditation. How do I do it? And, you know, I didn't know. So whatever I seen at the time, I did it. I just went, it's funny, my first, I don't know, probably a year or so, maybe 2 years, my meditation was in my little bathroom. Like, no matter who was in the house, I just go into the bathroom and lock the door, turn off the light, and that's what I did it all the time. But that was my spot. That was my sanctuary. In the bathroom, I'm talking about a little bathroom. You could barely turn around standing up in the bathroom, so I could barely fit sitting down in there. So,
Can I point something out real quick?
Yes, sir.
One of the things I always tell people, if you want to start a meditation practice, is create a special spot, you know, create an altar. So you were on the, you know, the king throne of altars in your bathroom, I guess. You know, you still had a special spot. Yeah.
Absolutely. That was my spot. And I don't care if I had 5, 6, 7 people in the house, I'm going to that bathroom. I said, anybody needs your bathroom? Everybody's like, no. Okay, I'm going to be in there for 20 minutes. So that's what I did. And I noticed that every day, if I do my meditation first thing in the morning, that my days were better. I just left the house in a better place.
Mm-hmm.
Right? So that's what happened daily. And if you do that every day, your weeks get better.
Mm-hmm.
If you do that consistently every day, your months get better, then your years, and then your life is better. So why wouldn't you do something that makes your life better? And it only takes a short period of time out of your day.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm like, I don't care if it doesn't do anything else, it's a pretty big deal because it's making my life better. So I continued on. Now we're going a little bit forward. We're going to go forward 3 years. So about 3 years into my meditation practice. And I still don't even know if I'm doing it right. I just know things are starting to change. I'm starting to, my perceptions are starting to change. My attitude in general is starting to change. I'm not drinking at all anymore. I'm not smoking anymore. I'm not doing any. I didn't even know what was happening. It's such a gradual change that before you know it, it's like you're doing a lot of the right things.
Yeah. So, would you say an easy, gradual, effortless change?
Absolutely. Of course, you're always going to have those times when you're like, wow, I'm really different, and then the universe hits you with a blind side, and you react to something, and it kind of lets you know that you're not as calm and at peace as you think you are, and there's always going to be those moments, no matter who you are, right?
Yeah.
Very few people that can always stay in that peaceful, calm state throughout their whole life. So 3 years into it, I don't even know if I started gradually moving away from meat, but I ordered a veggie omelet when I was sitting down with a friend. And she said, are you a vegetarian? Now, you have to understand, I didn't even think about becoming a vegetarian. I was eat chicken 5 times a day or turkey burgers. Mm-hmm. That's all I ate. So because, you know, you got to eat that to keep your muscle mass.
Right.
So.
Yep. That's it. Chicken and turkey burgers. That's the staple right there.
That's it. You're eating healthy. Right.
Uh-huh.
So.
That's healthy. Right.
Right. Exactly. So I said yes. And I don't even know why I even said it. I'm like, when I left there, I was like, what just happened? But I knew when I left there that I wasn't going to eat meat anymore. So I started looking stuff up immediately after I left about you know, can muscle and being a vegetarian. I didn't know what a vegan was at the time. And I started, what's funny is some of the pictures and images that came up when I started Googling vegetarians and bodybuilding are some of the people I know now, which is interesting. So I started looking that stuff up. I still think I need some other kind of protein. So I'm popping egg whites like I'm addicted to pills, right? I'm just eating.
Yeah.
I mean, I'm popping egg whites 10 a day or something like that.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm still eating cheese. I'm still eating cheese, right? Because now I'm just a vegetarian. But
right.
What I also looked up is the reason that they're saying that, you know, the connection between being a vegetarian or a vegan and meditation is you don't want to harm. On a deeper level, you don't want to harm any other beings. And that
mm-hmm.
makes so much sense that not on a subconscious level, I made that decision. It had nothing to do with just a conscious decision. It was just
mm-hmm.
automatic. It was automatic. Right, so I started looking at all this stuff, and I still see this vegan word popping, you know, moving around, it's popping around. And I really don't know what it is. I always thought vegan was some kind of religion or something. I didn't know, because
mm-hmm.
if you run with certain groups of people, that's not even a word that anybody knows in that group.
Right, it's a different language essentially. Right?
You have no idea, and then you know, I moved to West Oakland, and my neighbors when I would be like, you know, I'm a vegan. It's like they were like, oh, so you just still eat seafood and turkey? I was like, no, I don't eat seafood and turkey. So yeah,
uh-huh.
So after that, you know, I started seeing this vegan word popping around. And then finally, I finally figured out what it was. And I'm like, yeah, I don't know if I want to, you know, go all there, because I thought the chickens just had eggs and cows just had milk. Now, when I, you know, look back at it, you know, and how crazy it is and how conditioned we are, it's like mm-hmm. we're the only species to even drink milk after we're not babies.
Mm-hmm.
Not only do we drink milk after we're not babies, we drink another species' milk after we're not babies. Where we would never, ever take milk from a woman and drink her breast milk, we would drink it from a cow. That's how
mm-hmm.
crazy and conditioned we are.
Mm-hmm.
We would say that
mm-hmm.
if a woman gave us some breast milk and said, this is mine, do you want some? We'd be throwing up. Oh, gross, gross.
It'd be gross.
Right, but if a cow
yeah,
gave, if
right.
a cow came up and gave it to you, you'd just drink it down. And that's how crazy it is. So when I found out the treatment of the cows, in the treatment of the chickens, I'm like, I can't be a part of that. And that's when I went. Once I found out about that, that was the last time I had milk or eggs.
Mm-hmm.
Yep. And
was it hard, Monk? Like once you learned sort of the lesson that you learned, was it like, did you feel like you were depriving yourself, or you had to like use your willpower not to eat cheese or eggs or?
Not at all. So what I found out, and most people that are vegan find out, is once you stop eating the stuff that you've been eating for the longest time, your diet expands. You start eating stuff that you never even knew about. You actually
mm-hmm.
you eat more things now than you did then,
mm-hmm.
and healthier things is what people don't understand, because they're like, what do you eat? Do you just eat salad? It's like I used to only go into the store and center on one place. Now that you don't even not in that place anymore, you have the rest of everything to look at and to go through and to choose to eat. And it's just amazing that people think that vegans don't eat anything. So it's getting better and better as far as all the restaurants and things popping up. But yeah, I don't find it hard at all to find things to eat, and I'm actually on my way to raw vegan. That's where I wanna go.
Me too.
I say eat like a gorilla. You know, nuts, seeds.
Eat like a gorilla.
Silverback gorilla.
Strongest animal on the planet, Monk. You know, I always use that as an example to people. Look at a silverback gorilla. You know what some people say to me? Well, I don't know. Are they really the strongest animal on the planet? Does it matter?
Man, you got elephants, you got rhinos, you got gorillas. It's like the proof
right.
is there. Not only that, our bodies aren't even made to eat meat or even break meat down or chew meat. None of it.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah. So after all, I became vegan, and after that, I Jeff Palmer from Clean Machine. My sponsor, he inboxes me one day and he says, you want to be a part of this team? And I was like, yeah, what kind of question is that? At that point, I I haven't done any competitions. I wouldn't have ever even stepped on the stage if he wouldn't have picked me up, because I was just talk about it every once in a while, but never really seriously had any intentions. You know, this is something you just always, every once in a while, you'll speak on it, but
sure.
Nothing serious. So after he picked me up, like about 5 weeks, there was a competition in 5 weeks after he picked me up and he got me in it.
Mm-hmm.
And then that was my first competition. I only had one that year. But the second year is when I got my pro card. And I got my pro card against 7 meat eaters, and they were all within the ages of 20 years old, and I think the oldest one might have been close to 30.
Wow.
Yeah.
You hear that?
Yeah.
So is this like a pro? This is like a pro card. You have to, you know, qualify to get there, and then you have to win it to get your pro card.
So what you have to do in a competition, a pro qualifier, first of all, it has to be a pro qualifier. And then there has to be enough people. Then it's a natural competition, too, so I'm not all big. It's drug. They actually give you polygraph.
Natural, drug-free.
Yeah, they give you polygraph, and then they test your urine if you win. So there has to be enough people in the competition, first of all. And then, for instance, they'll have a group in physique. We don't go by weight. We go by height. So there will be 5'9 and over will be tall, and then 5'9 and under will be short. And then you gotta win your division, and then you gotta win in the overall. So if you win the overall at everybody, then you get your pro card.
Which is a significant task. I'm just pointing it out because I know the sport of bodybuilding. It's not easy, and it takes people sometimes. You know, they never get their pro card. But okay, go on.
It definitely was a blessing. So. And now from the time I started meditating to now, I call it my second life. If you want to put it in, like religious terms, I was born again. That's exactly what happened. So now my purpose in life is to help others. And everybody, if someone tells you their purpose is to, make money or do some material thing, then that's not their purpose. They just don't know their purpose yet. Our purpose has to involve helping others. If it doesn't, it's not our purpose. So just to be of service, just to help people find their power, you know, their strength is what I'm about now, as opposed to being selfish. And everything was selfish before I started meditating, everything. My image, what can I get out of this? You know, the whole thing, how much can I accumulate?
Sure.
It had nothing to do with anybody else. And, you know, what I found when I was living that life is it always seemed so hollow, and it always seemed so empty. And, you know, the days you get up with the hangover, it always seemed like the worst day in the world, mentally, physically, spiritually. You were just in a real dark place, and I think that's why addiction is you get addicted because you don't want that feeling. And what's the best way to get rid of that feeling? You do it again, right?
Absolutely.
Do it again. You want to stay in that. It's what I like to call it is a false sense of being present, because really when you're out partying, you are present in a false way. You're not thinking of anything else. You're having the greatest time of your life, right? You're not thinking about yesterday. You're not thinking about tomorrow. But when tomorrow comes, it's a whole other story, right? So meditation got to a place where I can be in a real state of presence, being present. You know, I still get caught up in my little, in my mind and my thinking, just like, you know, most everybody does. But I know how to bring it back. I can witness me going off track. I'm conscious of being unconscious.
Yeah, that's right. That's great.
So that's the difference. Yeah, go ahead.
Yeah. Well, I wanted to ask you, you know, lots of people try meditation and lots of people sort of give up or fail where, you know, you didn't have a teacher. You just sort of, you were self-guided or self-reliant in your practice. And then, you know, how do you think it evolved, or why were you successful when other people sort of quit or give up, or, you know?
I think just like with the gym and anything else you do, it's persistence. I tell people at the gym, I said, if you started doing eating right and working out right now, if I could take a picture, we could fast forward 2 years and I can show you a picture of what you would look like, you would never stop. You just have to know, right? If someone can give you what you would look like in 2 years, you would be in that gym every single day, day, religiously.
Mm-hmm.
It's the same way with meditation. You just have to know your life is going to make amazing changes if you keep doing it.
It's that faith, right? The desire to change and the faith that it will happen.
You have to know that it's – I said once you start changing, that's when you start changing. The minute you decide that you want to change and you take that first step, that's when you start changing. The minute you step foot in the gym is the minute your body starts to change. Now, it might not change as fast as you want it, but it already started. The minute you step on the treadmill, the minute you pick up a weight, your body is changing. Your mind is changing. So that's what we have to do. We have to know and have faith that whatever we're working towards, it's like, have you ever seen that the picture of the guy, he's under the ground and he has a pick and he's picking away underground trying to find the gold and he stops within an inch of making that breakthrough?
Sure, 3 feet from gold, right. Yes.
Like, he's right there and he just stops. Where if he would have hit it one more time, he would have been there. You have to know that you're going in the right direction. Mm-hmm. To whatever you want to do, whatever you want to
do. Do you know where that story comes from, Monk?
I do not.
3 feet of gold is a name by Charles Darby. It's in the book Think and Grow Rich. It's just on the chapter of persistence. That's it. You know, the only way you can fail is if you give up. And
that's it.
It's one of the things that we cover. You know, that was your thing, persistence. I mean, it's another book that we cover is The Greatest Salesman in the World. I know that I will persist until I succeed. I will persist until I succeed. So thank you for sharing with it, because that's all I did for my meditation practice was just believe in it and have faith. And then when I started to change, things started to change.
Absolutely. And then when you start seeing those changes, you don't want to stop. If for some reason I have to get up fast and get out of the house and I can't do it in the morning, I'm always going to do it in the evening sometime, because if I miss it, it's almost like I'm missing something. I need to do it. Not that I have to do it, but I just need that in my life. I need that in my life on a daily basis. So, I mean, you can do it sitting down. You can do it riding on a train. You can do it wherever you know. You don't have to do it anywhere. You can do it on the move. So I have to get it in every day, because it's just so much part of my life that if I don't do it, something don't feel right.
Yeah. That's great. Thanks for sharing. You know, I used to meditate a lot on the movie lots of Los Angeles, because when I was in my early 20s and I was working as a stand-in on all different, you know, film sets or whatever around town, you had a 6 a.m. call time. And I know I couldn't always get up and work out and meditate before I had to be at work. And so I would meditate on the lots. And I just always remember that, hearing people, look at that guy over there meditating. You know, it was 15 years ago. So it was a little weird then, but. Just do it.
Yeah.
Even if you only have a morning, a minute in the morning to close your eyes and connect, right? Like, do you ever do that? Just take a minute.
Right. It just gets you going in the right direction. It really does. And I always start my meditation with being thankful, gratitude, always. I always do gratitude, and I always get some really deep breaths in, and then I start sitting.
Good. Well, let's do that now. Let's all take a deep breath in. Let's just have another 10-minute meditation, and then we'll let people ask you questions, Monk. Does that sound good to you?
Absolutely.
All right. So let's just take another deep breath in, and if you'd like, if you opened your eyes, you can take a minute to close them. You know, just remember that you're hanging out in a warm, bubbling jacuzzi.
Bring all your attention to your third eye, or your homing beacon, and just begin to tune in to the life force within you that is you. And I just want to emphasize sort of the progression that Monk talked about from, you know, drinking alcohol and partying and clubs to becoming a vegan, how it was to some degree natural and effortless as he began to meditate and his consciousness expanded as he began to connect and still his mind. And it was just a natural, it's just a natural evolution of consciousness. And that it was when he came into the realization, when he became conscious that, you know, hurting the animals was sort of hurting all of humanity, or he just didn't want to take part in it anymore as an individual. It was effortless to stop. And I always remember, you know, an evening I had this, I got an opportunity to spend a couple hours with a 33-degree Mason. And how he explained to me the degrees of masonry and, you know, about it is that each degree that you go through, you sort of learn a life lesson or a significant lesson, and it makes you a better person. And once you learn that lesson, you can't go back. And I really feel it's the same way with becoming vegan, or like once you become conscious of the reason for doing it, it's pretty hard to go back. And it's, I couldn't eat meat right now. You know, I remember it was probably almost 10 years ago. It was 10 years ago. And I had been a vegetarian probably for only 3 years. And I didn't even know I was going to be a vegetarian. I didn't want to eat meat anymore one day. And then it was before a long bartending shift, 12-hour shift. And I accidentally grabbed a chicken salad instead of a pasta salad. And I had to eat it. There's no way I could not eat it. So I just went, like, I'm just going to eat it. Ugh. And, I mean, after, like, 3 bites of that chicken, I was dry heaving. And I remember gagging for three days just of the taste of it. So it's just to point out it's not a sacrifice. I don't feel like I'm giving up on anything. I'm making the only right decision, the only possible, you know, decision, logical decision to make. So take a deep breath in, and let's all just take a moment to think of the animals that we love. And then not just the animals we love, but all animals. Because don't you love animals? I mean, cows are awesome. They're also 2,000 pounds, and they're extremely muscular and strong. They can run up hills 30 miles an hour. And just think of the whole animal kingdom, you know, horses, lions, bears, and cats, and big cats, and dogs, and gorillas, and chimpanzees, and monkeys, and alligators, and sharks, and fish. And just send love to the whole animal kingdom. Just have compassion for the animals. Have compassion for the people whose job it is to, I mean, literally murder the animals. Have compassion and send love to the CEOs of the giant corporations that are sort of the fuel behind making this industry happen. You know, it's all a lack of consciousness. If they were more conscious, these things wouldn't be happening. And we can't solve problems by anger or, like, making people wrong, only by loving them, because love will solve all our problems, or at least positively influence them. Let's just take a moment to send love. Maybe just bring up both our hands and just imagine we're just blasting love out of our love satellites to all the CEO of big food corporations, to all the employees that work for big food corporations, and to, you know, send love to all the people who have no choice. Like, they have no idea what a vegan is. You know, all they're offered, American Indians, you know, on reservations, they're offered, like, blocks of cheese and, you know, poor people are pretty much offered the worst food that you can possibly get that's almost guaranteed to cause them illness and sickness. You know, take a breath in and send them love. and their food love, the people giving them that food love. And just see the whole world becoming more conscious of their consciousness, the whole world waking up and becoming more compassionate, treating each other better and treating animals better. Maybe bring down your left hand now and just leave up your right hand and let all that love galvanize the tip of your middle finger. You're protected and guided by the divine in all your activities, day and night, in all places. Let's go ahead and just give yourself a little touch there, another booster, your third eye. Tune into the feeling. And just kind of roll your eyes up, open your heart, and merge into the feeling. The more open you are to receive, the more you'll receive. Breath in. And just imagine the caged animals of the world being free. Like, just imagine them smiling and being so happy that they're free. Like, we've seen animals sometimes, or video animals, right, of like cows set free for the first time, and they just jump around and they kick and they're so happy. We've all seen animals smile. We know when they're happy. Just imagine that. And we say, California cows are happy cows. Has anybody ever driven on the 5 in the middle of the state? You know, they're anything but happy. They're, you know, they're in 2 feet of poop, stuck together, and they can't move. Let's send them love and imagine them being free. You know, we can't have peace as long as we have violence in this world. Peace begins with you, and it can extend into the animal kingdom, because we can't have peace either. We're violently murdering animals for our selfish well-being. Take a deep breath in. Just see the whole world living in happiness and peace. May the whole world live in peace. May you enjoy long life, good health, prosperity, happiness, and peace. Oh, just clap your hands together, and you can rub your hand, put your hands over your eyes, sort of putting the energy into your eyes. It feels good, and you can sort of open your eyes whenever you're ready. And I'm gonna stop the recording, but I'm gonna take people's questions and answers.